Announcements. So on Father's Day, Pastor Keith preached about the prodigal son, right? And he talked about how that was the only time you see God run. And there he did the dance with the song. And what a beautiful image that is, that this dignified father, this well-standing father in society, did the most undignified thing, and that was run to his wayward child. Right? Remember that? And if you don't remember it, look it up, get the podcast, read the scripture that it's based on, whatever you need to do, because it's amazing. And then Pastor Jonathan last week sort of piggybacked off that, and in what I think was probably one of the most timely sermons we've had in this room, was that we're no longer second-class citizens in God's kingdom. Isn't that amazing? None of us, not a single one, I don't care who you are, I don't care where you're from, I don't care what you look like, there is no second-class citizen in the kingdom of God. And that's just not fluffy, cute talk that we do, that's scripture. Jesus said, I don't call you slaves anymore, I call you friends. Paul talks about the spirit of adoption. He said, we've received the spirit of adoption that cries out to God and calls him Father and bears witness with us. It tells us we're children of God. That was Pastor Jonathan's sermon, From Slaves to Sons, is kind of how I think about that. So what Jesus did for us made us sons in the Father's house instead of just workers in the King's field. And so from those two messages and just kind of in my own mind, the way I like to think about what it means to be part of the family of God, what it means to be in his kingdom, what it means to be saved, for those of you who come from very evangelical backgrounds, what is a great metaphor for salvation? And in my mind, it means what Jesus did for us was he gave us a place at the Father's table. I told you, for me, it always comes back to food. I've got a southern mama that there is just no greater language of love than to stuff me until I almost die. So, sitting at the table with a parent is something that's really dear to me. It's something that's really close to my heart. And so that's a metaphor that really works for me when I think about salvation, when I think about what Jesus did. He took me out of the field and he sat me down at the table. And so if we can, I'd like to just kind of go with that metaphor, if we can. Are we good with that? He gave us a place at the table. He put a robe around us. He put his ring on our hand. He gave us his name, and he sat us down at his table. And you know, there's a lot that comes with being given a place at the table. If we're going to choose to take our place at the table, which so many of us did. That sermon last week was so amazing, wasn't it? It just called us out of the field. It called us out of the servants' quarters and to the table. We're sons. We're daughters. We have an amazing inheritance. And we have this immense responsibility, right? Because we're not just mindless workers in a field. We're heirs. We're sons. We're daughters. We're in on the plan. We're in on the mission. We're in on what God's doing in the earth. And so taking our place at the table, it implies a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff that's way too long for a sermon, probably way too long for a conference, probably way too long for a book, right? It's our life. It's what life means now, that we're seated at the table. It means something different, right? A slave's life is different than a son's life. Taking our place at the table means being comfortable in the room with God. Yeah. Just in a logical way, can we agree on that? If I'm going to sit and have dinner with Jensen, it implies that I kind of need to be comfortable in the same room with him. I kind of need to learn, how does he act? What does he say? When he does these things, what does it mean? What is my response going to be? You know how like a first date or a first outing with a group of friends can be really awkward because you're in this room with somebody and you don't really know them, maybe, or maybe you know them in a friend way, but now you're on a date with them, and it's like, how do I respond? What does it mean when you do that? You put your fork down. Does that mean like you're done and I should be done because it's rude and I'm eating too much? Or like you cleared your throat, you wiped your face. Does that mean that I have some crumbs on my cheek? But once I'm used to being in that room, in that particular space, I know what those things mean, right? When you're used to being out with someone and maybe they go like that, you know, like, oh, I have a booger. Or you have that couple's, you have the signal that means it's time to go, right? Can I get an amen from someone? Debbie and Janie, there is a signal. Charles and Kathy, that means it's time to go. We're done here. You didn't know that on your first date or your second date or your third or your fifth. It took time. It took being comfortable in the room. Because you know what I mean by being in the room with God? We've experienced it here. That moment where we were singing, but then all of a sudden, something's a little different. You felt it? Something kind of changes. Something starts happening. The guy next to you starts crying. You're like, what the heck's wrong with him? Or you start crying, you go, what the heck's wrong with me? You know what I mean? That's that moment where God enters the room. His presence enters the room. And I don't know about you, I hope you can agree with this, because I kind of have a bird's eye view. Sometimes we know what to do about that, and sometimes we don't. Are we on the same page? Maybe some of you always know what to do with the manifest glory of the creator of the universe, but I don't. Sometimes he comes in and I'm like, what is on your agenda for today? Because I'm lost. And he's like, yeah, sit down. And I'm like, okay. Sometimes we know what to do with it and sometimes we don't. And maybe for some of us who come from different backgrounds, it's maybe freaky. Have you ever been freaked out by the presence of God? Yeah, hopefully. And some of us more than others, depending on what it's like and depending on what the day's like and how God enters the room. But that's what I'm talking about. Being in the room, that moment when the Lord brings his tangible presence that you can feel and you can touch and you start to react to it even without knowing what's going on. I think that being the children around the table, part of our life is knowing what to do in those moments. Because he doesn't just come on accident. It's not like we just walk by him on the street and we just happen to run into. He's not like, oh, I didn't know you were going to be here today. No, he knew that in this room, within these four walls, at this time of day, you were going to be sitting in that seat. And he came to see you. He came to see me. And he's got something to bring. He's got a word to bring. He's got a healing to bring. He's got a reason for being here. And I think as children who know the Lord and who are in his household, it's really important that we know what to do when our Father, the King, steps into the room. It's not a Pentecostal message. It's not. The Pentecostals and Charismatics do not have a monopoly on the manifest presence of God. Sorry, we think we do. And you know what? It's something that we do really well. And I think every tradition, because we're all different, we each do something very well. We're comfortable with different aspects of God. The Pentecostals, we were comfortable when God stepped in the room. Now, we didn't do much with it when we walked out the door. But in the building, we knew what to do with God. And different traditions, I can speak to that because that's where I come from. I understand those nuances. And different traditions have their strong points and their parts that they haven't explored. But Pentecostals and Charismatics don't have monopoly on the manifest presence of God. In fact, God has been trying to show up in our room since the very beginning. Do you realize that? If you're in home group, you've been reading about the presence of God, the tabernacle and the temple and the garden. This has been what he's trying to do from the very beginning. When God created the world, he didn't create himself some lofty penthouse to live in, and then people got to just live in the dirt. He planted a garden to share with his creation, to share with his people. He walked in that garden with them. After that, he tried to speak from the mountain. After that, he's like, oh man, I got to get with my people. You guys set me up a tent. If you can't handle me talking directly to you, then just get me somewhere to crash. Get me a tent. I'll come crash there. That's where we'll hang out. That still wasn't close enough. So he took on flesh. God took on flesh. He's so crazy about being with us, being in the room, being able to touch you, that he took on our essence and he came and he walked this earth. You know, that still wasn't even close enough. What did he do after that? He's like, I'm going to live inside you. The garden didn't work out. You couldn't handle the mountain. I'm tired of crashing in that tent. The temple's not close enough. I did what I needed to do when I walked the earth, and now I want to live inside you. I want to so invade your space. You can't go anywhere without me. This has been God's plan from the beginning. And you know what? From the beginning, people have been uncomfortable in God's presence. Right? I started thinking about what are the ways that we see in Scripture and in life people respond to God's presence. And the first one that I thought about was shame. Right? That's from the very beginning. Adam and Eve. When God was like, Adam, what's up? It's time for our afternoon coffee, man. Adam hid because he was ashamed because he figured out he was naked. It's funny how we get ashamed over things that God knew about us before we even knew. But Adam hid in shame. You don't have to raise your hand, but how many times has the presence of God made us uncomfortable because we're ashamed? And I don't know about you, but the tradition I grew up in would have said to me, oh, well, you're convicted. You need to get something right before you can enjoy the presence of God. If you've heard that, it's wrong. It is not theologically sound. That is not what we're talking about here. But I bet every person in this room has not enjoyed being in the presence of God because of shame. Another thing is fear. I find this one funny because actually growing up as a crazy Pentecostal kid, I was scared to death at my first Baptist service because no one clapped their hands. The choir was on, man, they were good. And I stood up and started clapping my hands and I was the only one. And I sat my crinoline skirt right back down on the pew. That was freaky. Some of us, most of us, the presence of God freaks us out. It's like the Israelites when God spoke from the mountain. Thunder and glory and smoke and lightning. And he speaks to the people. They're like, yeah, we don't want you to do that again. Moses, why don't you deal with all of that glory and you just tell us what he said, because that's freaking us out. I know some of you have been freaked out by the presence of God. I have seen it. It's okay. It's a natural response. God is glorious. He's bigger than us. We're scared of stuff that's bigger than us. So shame makes us uncomfortable. Fear makes us uncomfortable. Self-righteousness and finger-pointing make us uncomfortable. I didn't want to put that one. I didn't want to put it. But I had to, because I was thinking about Mary and Martha, and I was thinking about Adam and Eve, and I was thinking about when God confronted Adam. What did Adam do after, like, oh, I'm naked, I don't want to see you, I'm ashamed? When he finally had to face God, he goes, she did it. I was thinking about Mary and Martha when Jesus was in their home and they're trying to get ready to serve him. And Mary is so sweet. At the feet of Jesus, she's like, I don't care if we ever eat. I want to bask in this moment. And Martha, who I love, she's working, she's preparing, she's making this thing happen. She goes, Are you kidding me? I'm doing all the work and she's enjoying your presence. I'm sweating and she's crying in your glory. How many times have we sat in on a Sunday morning and felt that way about our brother or our sister? Are you kidding me? Do you know what she was doing last night? Do you know how many hours I put in at this church this week? I am sweating, and that joker is crying in your presence. Why can't I get a breakthrough? Why can't I get my healing? Or we compare ourselves. Wow, she really receives from the Lord. I don't think I could ever connect like that. Wow, Pastor Jonathan got healing. I don't think that could ever happen for me. Listen how beautiful Martin plays in worship. I don't think I could ever connect like that. We do that. And we don't enjoy the presence of God when we do those things. And then another one I thought about, this is the last one. So shame and fear and self-righteousness and comparisons. Religion. This is mine. I will tell you, I am a recovering Pharisee. I'm a recovering fundamentalist. I'm a recovering black and white, this is how it works. Grace has been the most amazing miracle of my life. But I still fall into this sometimes. You know, when we were reading for our community Bible reading in Mark chapter 9, when Jesus takes Peter, James, and John, and they go up on the mountain. But the glory of the Lord comes down, and the Lord speaks about who Jesus is, and Jesus is, he glows and he shines, and there appears Moses and Elijah. People like start appearing. It's a real weird scene. It's like sci-fi. Weird kind of a thing. There's thunder and smoke and stuff. And Peter and James and John are up there. And Peter is so silly. He is such a human. And the glory of the Lord is up there on this mountain. And Peter goes, I know what I'll do. I will build a memorial for you and for Elijah and for Moses. And the version I was reading in yesterday had in parentheses, he didn't know what to say. He was so frightened. So he just said something religious, right? He fell back into an old pattern. Even though this is something I've never seen or experienced before. I don't know what else to do, so I'm just gonna do what we do back at the synagogue. You know? Or I'm just gonna do what we do back at the Pentecostal church. This is where I fall into. The Spirit moves in my life in a new way, and I think that my only response has to be something that I've seen before. Probably because I'm afraid of trying something new. Maybe I'm afraid of a new expression. I'm afraid of a new response. But I tell you, at least for me, because I struggle with religiosity, when I do that, I squash whatever the Lord is trying to bring into my life. When I revert, instead of just being still and seeing what God's going to do and seeing how he moves me to respond to his presence, when I get like Peter and go, oh, just build a memorial, it squashes it. It's over. It's done. The Lord's like, well, that's it. We'll try again next time. Killed the mood. It's over for today. I'll try again. And I'm like, oh, I should have just been quiet. I should have just waited. But we respond to these things, and this is what I was thinking about. We respond in these ways. Shame, fear, comparison, self-righteousness, religion. These are responses from our old nature. You know what I mean by that? The sinful nature, sometimes it's called the flesh. Sometimes it's called a slave mentality, to come back to Pastor Jonathan's message from last week. This is how a servant responds to the presence of the king, right? I'm afraid, I'm ashamed, I want it to be anyone's fault but mine, and I'm just going to try to figure out, I'm trying to try to keep busy because I don't want to deal with this the fact that the king's in the room. It's an old way. This is not how sons behave. This is not how daughters respond to their dad walking into the room. It's natural. It's okay. This is who we are, and this is our struggle, and this will always be our struggle until the day we're in heaven. But let's see what we can do to move past that, because I think we can enjoy the presence of God like never before. Because we're not in that sinful nature anymore. We're not servants anymore. We've been adopted, right? We have a new name. We have a new way of life. We have a new culture. We have a new way to respond so that we can be comfortable in the room with God, because we're family now, right? I think some people even like joined the family for the first time last week, right? It's like, we're family now. And we want to enjoy God's presence. And so I was thinking about, what are some things that we can expect as we become comfortable in the room with God? And I think you're going to resonate with some of these, because I think you've experienced some of them or all of them. I think as we respond to God's presence as children, we experience rest. Has anybody experienced that? Maybe you had just a really crazy week. You're tired, or you're spent. You're at the end of the rope, and you come in to the gathering, or you even at home or in a small group, and the presence of God just comes in. And you're just refreshed. It's like you just had the best night's sleep of your life. And you can rest. And your soul finds rest. And your body finds rest. And it reminded me of John, who called himself the beloved disciple. And when they're all in the room and Jesus is teaching them for the final time before he's going to go to Calvary, you know, this is when he washed their feet and they did the Lord's Supper and all these things. And they're reclining, because that's what you do on the Passover. You don't sit up, you recline. Some people wanted to ask Jesus a question, so they leaned over to John. They're like, John, blah, 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 ask him this. And it said, John, laying back on Jesus. And I think, what an amazing picture of being comfortable in the presence of God. Just resting, just laying back. And so I hope that we find ourselves resting in those moments. So I'm giving us things that we can expect and things we can look for that moment when God enters the room and we don't know what to do and we start to freak out. Try resting. Try resting. I think we can expect faith. I don't know about you, but there have been times when things I did not have faith for, I did not know how it was going to happen or even what I should be praying, but in the moment in the presence of God, something just said, ask for this. Ask me for this. It's like a water gun of faith, just right in the eye, like, and now you're going to have faith for this. I think you can expect that in the presence of God. It's like as Jesus walked by and he was teaching the crowds and people would just go, hey, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. And he's like, okay, bam, you, all right, come on. You know, or the woman with the issue of blood. You know, she spent all of her money trying to get well. And she's like, no, 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 if I can just get to Jesus, there he is, let me just touch his garment. Your faith made you well. And so in the presence of God, there will be moments of faith that we don't have just in everyday life. Look for those. If you're worshiping, we're in here worshiping, we're in prayer. And you've got whatever the problem is, whatever the thing is you've been praying for, and you feel that just kind of gripping sense of faith that God is going to do it, you take hold of that. Y'all know I was a flaky kid. I was watching Christian television at like 3 a.m. once. And I was watching a program that had been on earlier in the morning. And I was a singer. At this point, I was singing. I was traveling around singing with a little trio. And I had TMJ in my jaw, and the dentist was wanted to do surgery to fix it, otherwise it wasn't going to get fixed. And I was taking maybe 1,000 milligrams of ibuprofen before every time I sang, which was, you know, I had probably 3 or 4 gigs a week with 2 or 3 practices a week and things like that. And I was really young, and that doesn't sound like a major illness or anything, but, you know, it hurt, and my jaw would lock open sometimes, and it was just a real inconvenience. And now with what I do, I see that it would have been a major inconvenience. So, and it was painful, and So I was being my little flaky teenage self watching Christian television at 3 a.m. And they were worshiping on the TV. And I felt that moment of faith. I felt that moment where it was just like, ask me to heal your jaw. Okay, that's me. I will receive that. But it was that moment where I just knew that I could ask for that. And it would happen. And it did. And I had never took another pill for my jaw again, ever. I can chew gum now. And it's, you know, I can sing without pain. And so I've experienced that. And I think that God does that on much larger scale. When we're worshiping, when we're in tune with Him, you will experience faith. The next one I had, I named it righteousness. But what I mean by righteousness is the path of righteousness. In worship, in the presence of God, He teaches us the right way to do things. He teaches us, maybe it's wisdom about a certain situation. Or maybe it's a conflict you have with a person. Has the Lord ever dealt with you about conflict in worship? It's not fun, is it? Jesus said, don't even bring your offering to the Lord if you have a conflict with another person. Set it down, go make it right, and come back. That's pretty crazy. But God does that sometimes in worship. Sometimes He will start to speak to you about the right way you should be approaching people, the right way you should be approaching situations. It reminded me of Zacchaeus. You know, Jesus is like, hey, dude, I'm coming to your house. And everybody gossiped, of course, because he was a tax collector. And they're like, oh, well, that Jesus, he's going to eat with the sinner again. This is a corrupt man, right? He's been stealing from the poor. He's been taking out extra taxes for himself. He is hated. He is despicable. He's an exploiter and an oppressor. He stands up from the table with Jesus and he goes, Lord, I'm going to give half of everything I own to the poor. And if there's anybody I owe anything to, I'm going to pay him back four times. I think that's sometimes the response that happens when we're in the presence of God. We realize, oh my gosh, what have I been doing? And don't get that confused with the old religious thing that says you got to clean it up before you come in. You got to get it right before you enjoy the presence of God. Remember, Jesus goes to Zacchaeus, the exploiter, the oppressor, and he goes, let's hang out. And the response from that is, whoa, I got to get this right. I got to make this right. So expect that. Expect God to start speaking to you about those things when he's in the room. So we can expect rest. We can expect faith. We can expect to be led on the path of righteousness. And we can expect expression. We see that. I think that's what we most see. That's the outward response to God's presence. It reminded me of the woman with the alabaster box, right? She felt comfortable in the presence of Jesus. She couldn't wait to get at his feet. She couldn't wait to pour out her best. You know, what an expression that was. She came into a room full of high and mighty men, but she was so comfortable with him. And she was so wanting to be near him, so wanting to express her gratitude and love that she came, she broke that box, she poured that perfume on him. She began to weep. She's like, oops, sorry, I got some tears on your feet. I'm going to dry it with my hair. That is our response to God in the room. When Bobby walks in the room, he's my friend. I love him so much. And when he walks in the room, there's an expression that happens. I'm so glad to see you. And so we express. There's expression that happens. You can expect that when God walks in the room. Which of those do you think that you most easily tend toward in God's presence? Is it easy for you to rest in his presence? Is it easy for you to have faith in his presence? Is it easy for you to receive instruction in his presence? Is it easy for you to express praise in his presence? And which of those do you want to work on? And there are more. This just came from my head. But which of those do you need to press into? Which of those do you need to explore? Because I want to tell you that being in the room with God, sharing space with his presence, it's an essential and an inherent part of spiritual life. If we're in his family, we're going to share space with him. It's going to happen. And if you're around TGPA for very long, you're going to notice that we do it on purpose. That is what Sunday morning is. It's a time to be in the room with God and with each other, right? We have all kinds of other activities. We have Sunday school, home groups, Bible studies, kids' church, fellowship, community, social activities. Those are all addressing all kinds of aspects of our spiritual life. But Sunday mornings, that's the space to encounter God, to get in the same room with him. These people that you see, we're not up here to play music for you. We're up here to create a space. We're up here to open a window. We're up here to push back boundaries. It's like coming into a cluttered room and we start going, okay, push back. And we need space. We need space. People need space. They need space to encounter God. They need a chance to encounter God. That's what Sunday mornings, that's what we come here for. So if you're coming on Sunday, expect it. Expect to be in the room with Jesus because we're doing it on purpose. And the reason for that, in an hour and a half, I can't do a single thing for you. And neither can anybody else. I barely get to say hello to you on Sunday morning. And probably that's the case for most of you. You barely get to say hello. But God, if we can make space for him to walk in the room, he can do a lifetime's worth of work in a moment. Have you experienced that? It's hard to describe, right? It's hard to put your finger on how to talk about it. But look at the nodding heads if you think I'm crazy. God can do in a moment, in a second, what we cannot do in a lifetime. And that's why this is a space that we want to push back the clutter, push back the noise, create a space for people to encounter the presence of God. You know what I call the band? I don't know if they know this. Some of them do. I call them window openers. It's this metaphor that I have in my mind for what leading worship is. And it's opening a window. Right? Because the Spirit of God, the presence of God is a wind. But sometimes we approach the window and it opens easily. One note. And you guys are ready. You know, you're ready. The window's open. The wind starts flowing in. We're good. Sometimes we get there. The window's already open. There are times we haven't even started. And you can just feel the energy in the room. People are ready. Those are good days. Yeah? Sometimes we get to the window and it's like it hasn't been opened in 5,000 years. And it's like a crusty old get out the X-Acto knife and start, you know, chipping away. But that's okay. That's our job. So we're going to spend the last portion of the service just inviting God into the room. When you get ready to go, please go. But as long as you are here responding to the presence of God, I will be here worshiping with you. Stay as long as you want. Leave when you want. But this is a crucial part of our spiritual lives. Encountering God in the room.